When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Tuesday afternoon, June 22nd, 2021 edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by John Taylor of Fangraphs.com, as I am every single Tuesday afternoon. John, good evening, sir. How are you?
Bonjour, how are you doing?
Not too bad. I'm a little nervous. What were your main takeaways from Tennessee's 6-0 shutout loss to Virginia on Sunday?
You shot what in the who now?
So you missed it, John. You did not catch the Sunday afternoon college.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a thing. I missed out on that one.
Mm. Did you go to any college baseball games when you were an undergrad? What is the Ivy League scene like with college baseball?
Yeah, I covered Columbia baseball when I was there for a couple of years. It's very boring. You don't see a whole lot of top flight players, really. The best players you see are usually, probably the best player I saw in my time there was Ryan LaVarnway.
Man.
Who's carved out a decent career as a major league backup or at least a kind of minor league backup or whatever. I think he just signed with the team a few weeks ago, but yeah, you don't get a lot of super high quality baseball in the Ivy League. It's not really where big time players go.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. The Vols play at 2, so it's overtaken a little bit earlier today, but blanked. It was tough. You'll know the name of the starting pitcher for the Virginia Cavaliers, Mr. Abbott, who is a lefty, and he's, I think, ranked by Kylie McDaniel of ESPN like the 61st overall prospect. So yeah, they got him, but the Hoos are throwing out an 0-5, like 7.65 ERA guy today, which is just very frustrating, John, that he was not on the mound on Sunday. So do or die with the battle for real UT, Texas and Tennessee. Who do you have, John?
A team one of the T teams.
This is an easy, it's a slam dunk. I'm throwing it right down the middle to ingratiate yourself to my Tennessee fandom and my Tennessee listeners. All you have to say is just the Vols, obviously.
How many Tennessee listeners do you have?
Pretty fair amount, sir.
Okay.
I mean, I do the Rocky Top Let's Rock every Friday. We got Tennessee coverage all around the place. Got a lot of Tennessee. I'm not trying to say I'm the king of Knoxville at this point, John, but people are talking. No, it's okay. And unpleasant news, John. I feel like we have talked about the Minnesota Twins a lot, season from hell, the Diamondbacks season from hell in the NL, but Byron Buxton, your guy, Byron Buxton, gets hit by a pitch last night, his left hand, and it is a boxer's fracture. Had you heard of this phrasing before? I did not know this was a thing.
I had never heard of that, but I do find it amusing, not amusing, but maybe fitting that Byron Buxton has managed to suffer injuries that aren't even baseball related.
Yeah, it is.
That's not really great.
And he was just like, what does this mean for the Twins? What does this mean for a season? Is it just, this isn't even like an injury plague person type deal. This is just like he got hit really hard in the hand. Like, I mean, it's a new type of injury that we hadn't heard before, but like, I don't know. He just got hit by a pitch in a bad spot. Like, I don't know if we can add this to the list of like, maybe Byron Buxton's just never going to be healthy. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you're right. It's a fluke injury. Any hit by pitch is by definition a fluke injury. I think the issue with Buxton has always been, you know, health is something that is a tool, so to speak. It's just under a little less control, I imagine, than all the actual other tools, like, you know, hitting and power and running and all that. But it is definitely a skill being able to stay healthy. And even though this isn't, this is a, like we said, a fluke injury on a hit by pitch, this is Buxton. I mean, the injury he suffered before that was not, that was a guy who goes seemingly 100% after every ball and runs hard all the time. And just invariably his body doesn't seem to be able to stand up to it, which just bums me out, especially given that, especially given the way he has taken that step forward. I think everyone was waiting for him to take this season. And in the brief period of time he was active again, he was hitting quite well again. So, I mean, as for what this does to the Twins, long term, nothing really. He'll be back from this. You know, it's a broken hand. They'll be back in 4 to 6 weeks. Short term, I mean, the Twins were already pretty well out of the playoff race at this point. Obviously,
but they had won five straight.
They had won five straight. Yeah. So there is that. And that's not to say that they were completely dead, especially given the AL Central is a mess and that neither of Chicago nor Cleveland is the strongest team right now. But even with those five straight wins, their playoff odds are only back up to 3%. They're still 10 games under 500. They're still only projected to win 78 games by our metrics. Like, I think obviously losing Buxton makes it that much less likely than they make the postseason. I do wonder if part of Minnesota's plan was, okay, we get Byron Buxton back healthy and we kind of start a run from there. I don't know who else, if there's kind of still missing anyone health wise. They thought maybe it's the equivalent of like a second half burst. You know, we get Buxton back. We get, well, actually really, it really was mostly Buxton, I guess, depending on what happens with Josh Donaldson, but yeah, but they've gotten Kenta Maeda back and maybe he rounds into shape. Oh, I guess they have Michael Pineda on the injured list as well, but that just hasn't happened, obviously. And I think at this point, like, there aren't really any, and like I as noted, Buxton was really the biggest internal reinforcement coming back for this team, depending on how you feel about Pineda and depending on how you feel about Kenta Maeda's seeming like return back to being Kenta Maeda. I have to imagine that the Twins front office probably doesn't think there's much of a chance left at this point. Again, 10 games under 500, 12 games back of Chicago. Not sure what the wild card position is, but if you're 10 games under 500, it's probably not good anyway.
Well, you're out anyway. The AL East is, and the AL West have locked
up.
Yeah,
the AL East,
like, the AL A's would have to fall off the cliff, or Astros, and you have like the Rays. And
right.
The Blue Jays are the fourth best team in the AL East, and they're a good baseball
team. Yeah, you're
asking
for Boston, Toronto. You're asking for two, or one of Boston, Toronto, New York, Houston, or LA, Oakland, not to make the playoffs. And that just seems very unlikely. So I think maybe Buxton just ends up kind of being one of the last nails in this particular Twin season coffin. I think we talked a little bit about how we wouldn't be surprised if they were sellers at the deadline. The question is kind of who can they sell off aside from guys who are going to be free agents next year, like Andrelton Simmons or Nelson Cruz, or, you know, if someone for some reason is interested in J-Hap. But I think for the most part, the Buxton just sucks in general. I really wanted to see him keep playing the season, or at least not have to get injured again. But I do think if there is one more likely than not, like, done consequence of this, it's that the Twins are probably out of this at this point. Probably. I mean, they've been out of this at this point. But I think there was probably a lot banking on Buxton coming back and kind of helping to spur things. And that's obviously now not going to happen.
The Tampa Bay Rays, they are going to have the debut of Wander Franco tonight, John. Mm-hmm. How excited are you to see Franco make his debut, the number one prospect in baseball for the Tampa Bay Rays tonight? And what are your summer to fall expectations for him?
So it's interesting because in Franco, I mean, when was the last time we really got like a consensus number one prospect who got called up? Was it Vlad? I don't even know if Vlad was consensus number one, but I guess it's, and when I think about that, it's not actually that we haven't even seen them that often. We've gotten Vlad, we've gotten Tatis, we've gotten, obviously, in years past, Harper and Trout
Hayward,
Ronald Acuna, obviously. So we've gotten plenty of top prospects who've come up recently. I think what's interesting, if not standout, about Franco, and this is just going back, I haven't watched him play because I haven't not been much of a Durham Bulls fan, so I've missed out. But so, I mean, I've been going pretty much entirely off, you know, prospect list. So I'll just go to the Fangraphs one just because this is what stands out to me, obviously, is a guy who gets, was an 80 overall grade on him, which I think is the first and only time Fangraphs has handed that out for a prospect. So you can get excited based on there. Every tool is currently graded at present a 45 or better. 60 grade on his hit, 55 on his raw power, 60 on his run. The kid is above average in every single thing he does. And I'll note something else we actually had today up at Fangraphs from Eric Longenhagen. We do a daily prospect notes every day, and today's was just focused on Franco because there was there were a few minor league games yesterday, but also because he is coming up. And in that article, Eric dove into using some stats generated from a video software program called Synergy, and basically made the note that Franco never swings and misses and just makes a ton of contact. You know, he's at the level, contact-wise, of guys like Adam Frazier and Alex Verdugo and DJ LeMay, Michael Brantley. These are names you want to be at when it comes to contact and avoiding swings and misses. As Eric described him, a remarkable bat-to-ball prospect who also happens to have relevant power while occupying a valuable spot on the defensive spectrum. So I think that's the thing about Franco. I don't know necessarily if he's going to be the type of hyper-electric Tatis or Acuna-style player who hits these huge bombs and steals bases with a plum and is just a ridiculous fielder and has all the swag. I don't know if we're going to see that, but I do expect to see a prospect who, you know, based on the scouting, based on the stats, should immediately slot in as a viable, valuable major league regular, which is crazy considering he is 20 years old. You know, that's the wildest part. He is 20. And we're already talking about someone who probably has an all-star floor right now. So that it's obviously a huge thing for the Rays. It makes them deeper. It makes them more versatile. And I think it's a nice boost to them too, coming off this losing streak they're on, that, you know, any amount of talent at this point can help.
Yeah, I'm just, it's not even really the offense that I'm worried about with the Rays. It's more about the pitching with Glasnow being gone, and who knows how right he'll be for the rest of the way. I don't know. There was a piece this week about from David Schoenfield on ESPN.com, one big move for each Major League Baseball team ahead of the deadline. What stood out to me was Max Scherzer being an option for the Rays, just because his 2021 money is weird and his contract stuff next year, they don't have to pay him any. Like, there's actually like a way, the way the Tampa Bay Rays operate, that would make Max Scherzer make sense there. What do you make of that? And was there another name on that list that stood out to you? And do you think the Nationals are at a point where, I think they're like 3 games under 500 and 5 games out of first, at least as of this recording, they're right there with the Braves. But what do you think about all of that?
Yeah, I don't know. The hard thing with the Nationals is they've had opportunities in the past to make moves like that. Obviously, they had an opportunity in the last year of Harper's contract. They've had opportunities in the past to move other veterans when they've been struggling. I mean, I guess the fact that they are in third place in a division that is just kind of an open-ended mess would probably lead me to believe that if Scherzer, especially if he's healthy coming off that what seemed like a minor groin strain, leads me to believe that they will keep him through the deadline if they're remotely close, if only because I also imagine that, you know, for all the value Scherzer has, you know, for what he offers on the field and particularly what he offers in the postseason, I don't know how many teams are really going to be lining up to offer the kinds of players who would make enough of an impact for you to move him. I mean, he is a 37-year-old free agent to be, who, you know, despite his amazing numbers, is still a 37-year-old pitcher with thousands of innings on his arm. I can't imagine there'd be too many teams interested other than the locked in contenders who may just need one more starter for the postseason, or might be a team that, because I feel like, and this is probably the case depending on who else is available, but I feel like they're more likely than not going to be cheaper pitching options for those teams that want them if they don't feel like paying the Scherzer premium. And so to me, that leaves teams that are honestly, I would, I, what I was, again, I was trying to get at is I'd be more, I feel like it'd be more likely that a already kind of advanced playoff team would be the one going after Scherzer. I mean, theoretically, he can make the most impact for a borderline team. Like, I'd love to see what he could do for the Red Sox, obviously. But I don't think a team like Tampa is going to want to part with the prospects. I don't think, and I also don't think the money that he's still owed for the rest of the season makes it work for them. I could see a team like Houston maybe giving it a shot. That would be super interesting if they wanted to try to bring Scherzer on board to kind of give themselves that one more reliable arm beyond Greinke and, I guess, McCullers, assuming they don't get Verlander back this season. Fascinating to me would be like the Mets or something, but I can't see the Nationals ever doing that.
No.
Beyond that, I mean, if the Giants really decide they want to go for it, I know they already have a legitimate number one pitcher in Kevin Gausman. This would give them not only a second, but also a guy who, you know, they can line up for playoff starts. The only question, of course, with the Giants is, are they really going to want to go for it when they have very good chance of making the playoffs, but a very low chance of winning the division because of the Dodgers and the Padres, even though they're, you know, two games up on LA and 4.5 up on San Diego. We still give LA the overwhelming favorite or the overwhelming odds in the NL West. So that obviously has to be taken into consideration. But I don't know. I don't know really what the best fit for Scherzer would be. I'm just kind of spitballing. But I do get the sense that it won't matter if the Nationals are anywhere within range of first place in the NL East. They're only 5 games back right now, even though that only amounts to a 5% playoff odd because, you know, same as the American League, it's going to be really crowded for the NL wildcard race between two of those three NL West teams, more likely one of the two Central teams that is Milwaukee or Chicago. Another one of those NL East teams like Atlanta is probably going to be in that mix. I just think it's going to be, I think it might end up being something where Washington just kind of decides, you know, what we're going to get back is just not worth it. We might as well just let it play out with Scherzer, see if we can get close. And if not, we offer him a qualifying offer. He turns it down. We get a draft pick. And or maybe we bring him back. You know, maybe this is something where Scherzer likes DC so much that he's just willing to come back on a 2 or 3 year contract with a high AAV. But that doesn't tie up the Nationals' long term finances beyond that.
If he does that, though, I think he would need like some assurance from the Learners that like, yeah, we're going to make up for the Rendon Harper departures. Like we're going to.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
There's no help on the way. They have the worst farm system in baseball right now. There's no internal options to replenish this group around Soto and friends. You have to be active on the trade market or in free agency.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing. It's like if you keep Scherzer, that means two things. One, like you said, because this is a bad farm system, you've passed on your biggest chance probably of anyone on the roster who isn't named Soto or Trey Turner to increase the talent level in that minor league system through whatever Scherzer would have brought back in a trade. Second, if you keep him and make plans to re-sign him, then you have to go out and add more through free agency as well. You can't just bring back this exact same Nationals team and hope that everything is going to turn around in 2022 with better health and maybe better results out of Soto. You need to go out, you need to add pieces, you need to make this team better because, and this is the thing, like you're looking at this Nationals team, I don't think they've been unlucky, and I don't think anyone's going to argue they've been unlucky. I think this Nationals team is what it is. They're bang on their Pythagorean record. This is just not a particularly good roster right now. There are just a lot of holes, a lot of guys miscast as starters like Josh Harrison or Starlin Castro. You know, this is a team that needs work done in the offseason. I almost wonder if they're better off moving Scherzer and just kind of refocusing and rebuilding a bit, maybe retooling around Soto, extending Turner, you know, giving some space to guys like, I guess Andrew Stevenson has kind of fallen on his face, but kind of letting some of the younger guys on that roster, like I know like they're giving the time to Eric Fetty right now, and I guess Joe Ross is technically still young. But, you know, kind of seeing what else there might be there. Or maybe just more of a soft rebuild where they let go of the high-priced veterans and just try to do something kind of what the Giants or the Red Sox were doing in the last couple of years, which is just kind of cycling through some younger options, improving the farm system, cutting payroll. I think that's more likely than not going to be the path the Nationals choose, because I think this particular window has also probably closed, regardless of whether or not Scherzer stays.
I don't know. Like, the Nationals would not surprise me either way. As a Braves fan,
I think the big problem with them is they can't count on any starter who isn't Scherzer right now. Patrick Corbin is a total coin flip. Strasburg is hurt. Fetty has no good track record. Joe Ross has been fine. He's a back of the rotation starter. John Lester, despite his surface stats, has viciously bad peripherals and is almost certainly going to slow down in the second half because that's been his thing for the last few seasons. The bullpen is not particularly strong. The offense doesn't have a whole lot of depth. I think this is just like, I think the best case scenario for this Nationals team is 500 at this point. And if that's the case, how valuable is Scherzer to that versus whatever you can get from whatever team happens to have interest in him, even if you have to eat some money? You know, because again, keeping Scherzer for next year, you have to do more. And looking at the contracts the Nationals are going to shed, aside from Scherzer, they still owe a ton of money to Strasburg, a ton of money to Corbin. Trey Turner is heading into his last year of arbitration eligibility and is probably going to be pushing $20 million on that. I mean, they're going to let go of guys like Castro, Dan Hudson, probably Brad Hand, maybe Yan Gomes. They have a very cheap option on Kyle Schwarber that's good. But also, this is going to be the first year of Soto's or the first year of arbitration for Soto. That's going to get big. They have a decent amount of money committed to the books already for next year. $69 million plus another 11.5 in option values and maybe some 30 some million in arbitration. You know, there's payroll to shed if they can find someone to bite on Corbin or if they can negotiate a long-term deal with Turner that kind of spreads some money out. But otherwise, and this is a team that always feels like they're financially leveraged to the hilt. It does feel like there is a lot of work that would need to happen with Washington to make them a true contender next year. And like you said, none of that help is coming internally because that farm system is not good enough to provide that help. They need to go all in on free agency and trades. And I just don't see how they're going to do that if there is a desire to keep that payroll, you know, in a certain range, which given that this is Major League Baseball, I assume that exists, that there is probably a real desire to keep that payroll to a certain number well below the luxury tax.
But the Lerner family, I think, is one of the ones that you have to wonder because they have been committed and they have been a top five payroll for a long time. Lerner family, I don't know. They don't seem like Lerner and Rizzo do not seem like a ownership front office group that is all that enticed by turning into a long-term rebuild in a hot spot.
No, and that's the thing. The Lerners don't give off that vibe of long-term rebuild. That's why I think more of a soft rebuild along with San Francisco and Boston have kind of done. Is if you're in charge there, maybe you can sell the Lerners on, we're not going to be competitive next year, but this window has closed. We need to improve this farm system. We need to get younger. You know, let's try that. And let's see if we can't do like San Francisco and Boston have done and turn it around quickly by making the right investments in free agency and getting some more young, cost-controlled guys. Because as I know, like this roster has turned over pretty fast and doesn't really have a whole lot of youth left on it, especially in the pitching side. So you know they've got to make some decisions there at some point.
Javier Baez getting benched for losing track of the outs while running the bases. What do you make of the decision to bench him?
I mean, I think it's something you, I mean, you can't have a guy, not just, Baez didn't just lose track of the out. He lost track of the outs two times within the same inning. And you can't really do that.
Can I offer a counterpoint for him? Can I offer a defense?
Yes.
He may have done what I had done this weekend, John, which was binge Mayor of Easttown. Okay. And he was reeling from just how good of a six-part miniseries that it was.
I thought you were going to say he was reeling from just the heaviness of it.
I mean,
it sounds like
too.
A very heavy show.
It's a very heavy show. It's probably one of the best TV shows I've seen in several years. Like, it's unbelievable how good that TV show is.
All I know about it is that Kate Winslet vapes and does a pretty good Delco accent.
Both are true. She vapes a lot. There's a lot of vaping on that show. There's a lot of Yingling product placement. There's a lot
of Rolling Rock.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're not allowed to shoot a movie or TV show in Pennsylvania that doesn't have Yingling or Rolling Rock prominently involved.
Apparently not, but it's a delight. And I just think that Javier Baez, we can't rule out that he was just thinking about that ending.
No, and that's fair. But I think if you're David Ross, yeah, you don't really have a choice. A guy commits two dumb errors like that in the same inning and gets himself doubled off. I mean, that's the kind of stuff where I feel like, I mean, obviously never played, never been a manager, caveats as always. I feel like that's the kind of thing where it's like you have not even make an example, but that you've got to make a point of showing the rules apply to everybody, including the stars. You fuck up like that out there, you go on the bench. And I think that's probably just smart on Dave. I mean, the nice thing is you heard nothing about it post-game, I don't think. You didn't hear Baez complaining. You didn't hear any other teammates complaining, which gives me the sense that this was handled correctly and that everyone understood what this was, that this wasn't, like, this wasn't out of line. This wasn't vengeful. This was, you make a mistake, there will be consequences for it. And I think it's important just to remind a team of that every now and then, that, hey, nobody is special here. Nobody is above the rules. You know, I am the final authority here, and if you displease me, you're going to hear about it. And I think every manager pretty much has to do that at some point.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Jacob DeGrom had his 12th straight start with 1 or 0 earned runs, which passed Bob Gibson's record for a traditional starter. John, how is he doing it, and how is it sustainable that this is just a thing?
Magic. He's doing it through magic and the fact that he's actually Walter Johnson traveling forward in time. I have no idea how DeGrom is doing this. He is one of the most unreal, baffling things that has happened in baseball in a long time. This dude who just basically taught himself how to throw 100 miles an hour with a 93-mile-an-hour slider that has stupid movement and spin. It makes no sense. What I found so funny about last night's start was when the umpires came out to do their sticky substance check. DeGrom got to be the first to receive that treatment and found nothing, because it's just so perfect. Nothing. Jacob DeGrom doesn't need help. He doesn't need sunscreen or rosin or spider tack or gorilla glue or whatever the hell else other guys use. This is just how good he is on his own. The only comparison I have in my mind right now is 99 Pedro, who was so good it just felt like he was playing another sport entirely. You saw guys go up there with no chance to make contact, no hope of doing anything other than maybe making Pedro Martinez waste 3 pitches to strike him out. And I think DeGrom is in that same place. I mean, I know you watched that start because the Braves were prominently involved. That first inning at bat that Ozzie Albies had, where DeGrom threw him 2 sliders and Albies swung like he had literally never seen a slider before. You know, and that's a good hitter in Ozzie Albies, who has seen many sliders in his lifetime and has probably hit a lot of them very hard. And here he is swinging, not just swinging over the top, but just looking like he decided to swing when the ball was already like 95% of the way to the plate. Like, he had just then decided he was going to swing, and then throwing out this half swing sword as Pitching Ninja does, just looking I don't understand how DeGrom does it. I don't understand how he is like this. I don't understand how he has built himself into this. It is genuinely fascinating to watch. He is the best pitcher in baseball without even a question. There's number 2 is Gerrit Cole, and it is such a big gap in my mind. It's not fair. Every Jacob DeGrom is the stupidest thing. His ERA plus is close to 800. He's almost 800% better than the league average right now. That doesn't make any sense. How can you be 800% better than something? He leads the majors in ERA, ERA plus, FIP, WHIP, hits per 9, strikeouts per 9, and strikeouts per walk. That's Pedro. That's Pedro. Come again. That's just how it works. You just, apparently once a generation, we just get a Pedro, and this is ours. At 33 for the Mets. So let's all have fun with that as he, assuming he stays healthy, waltzes to what will be his 3rd Cy Young Award in 4 years. And you could make the argument pretty easily that, you know, if writers had been a little more skeptical of Bauer and a little more pushy about his sticky stuff, RPM, whatever, you could make an argument that DeGrom could have won last year. It would have been, I guess, him or Darvish. We're talking about someone who would, in an alternate universe, is on his way to his 4th straight Cy Young Award. That's unreal. That is absolutely crazy. What a pitcher. What a player.
I don't like it, John.
Well, I know you don't like it, but that's your problem.
Nah, I don't like it.
I like it a lot. It's fun. It's fun watching Jacob DeGrom pitch. He's immortal.
It's fun when he's not pitching against the Braves like yesterday. That's when it's fun.
Okay, well, then the Braves are the problem here, is what I'm is what I'm seeing.
Kyle Gibson.
Yes.
Is 5-0.
Yes.
With a 2.17 ERA. Wow. The Rangers may have stumbled into something here. Like, this just never ends. Why did we overthink this? Because they do this now all the time with Mike Minor, Lance Lynn. They're just the old pitcher rehabilitation factory. Like,
yeah, I want to play a game where I'm going to look at next year's free agent starting pitchers and try to decide who the Rangers are going to sign to some weird 2 or 3 year contract where you all just look at each other and go, what are you doing? And then that guy turns into a top 5 AL Cy Young contender.
I'm ready for this game. Who do you have?
Yeah, I just want to pull up the list. Here we go. Okay. It's not going to be Greinke.
No.
Let's see. We've got, let's keep scrolling. Kevin Gausman, I guess, would have been the guy if he hadn't turned into that guy. I'm going to hurt your feelings and just say Drew Smiley.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's bad. Here are some intriguing options, though. Garrett Richards.
Mm.
Zach Davies.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Bundy.
Oh, Dylan Bundy's the answer.
Oh, here's one that here's a real one. Jay Happ.
Yeah.
If the Rangers turn Jay Happ around, then clearly something is really, or Arrieta, if they sign 36-year-old Jake Arrieta, turn him into a useful starter again.
I like this bit that the Rangers are doing. They're terrible, but they're doing some good work for the vets.
You got to bring Martin Perez back
to
try to work their magic on him. I mean, there are some guys here like John Lester, Steven Matz, John Gray, Julio Teheran, Jose Urania, where you're like Matt Moore. There are just some names here where you're like, yeah, Merrill Kelly. You know, any one of those guys, I think at this point, if they end up with Texas next season, and mentally you're already projecting in your head, okay, that guy's going to have an ERA under 3 by the start of June and is going to be all over the trade market. So I'm excited for that to happen.
John, I got the stat of the day for you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The Arizona Diamondbacks losing streak is over.
Hey, congrats to the Arizona Diamondbacks.
That's the stat. Yeah, they won their last game.
Being less ass.
It's not even that. Like, they just got destroyed with injuries. Like, I don't know if we've ever seen a team get just decimated like they have with bad luck. Like, they are the most bad luck team in baseball in a long time, I feel like.
Yeah, it's a real problem for them. And I know we talked about them last week, that they went from this kind of quiet pseudo contender to just this. And I do think you're right that there's just been they've had a lot of depth issues. They've had a lot of injury issues. They've had a lot of guys who've just, you know, they just haven't had a lot of depth. And it's obviously only going to get worse as they start trading guys like Eduardo Escobar or Asdrubal Cabrera, whoever else. But yeah, I mean, I guess like we talked about last week, I don't really know where the Diamondbacks go from here. They have a good farm system, but it's still a couple years away from turning out, I think, guys who are ready to make an impact. So yeah, I mean, I think this is just going to be this team for a couple of years. It's just bad without a lot of interesting pieces, just kind of quietly existing on the margins and waiting for those prospects to show up. I mean, I guess it makes sense given the timeline and the rest of the NL West that the Dodgers, Padres, and Giants are all good right now, and the Dodgers and Padres are certainly not one-year wonders. They're going to be good for a bit, and maybe that's the Giants too. Their farm system is getting much stronger. So it's just kind of a tough spot for Arizona to be in generally. Like, this is already a division with two super teams, and now you have the Giants getting better too. I mean, at least I got the Rockies to keep them company down in the basement, so that's nice.
Yeah. Well, the main event of this program tonight, John, there was a really good piece by Tom Vercucci in SI.com this week.
Shouts to Ducci Main.
Yes, yes. Just a great writer. Love reading his stuff. And Emma Bacchilari and just all kinds of great reporting still going on at SI.com. So he has this good piece about he spent some time with Kapler and this team, and I hadn't realized just like the impact of Andrew Bailey, Brian Bannister. There were some, let's remember some guys in this Giants pitching staff now.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at how they've put together this new staff with Sanchez, as you alluded to with Kevin Gausman, I'm never going to pronounce the guy's name right. There's zero chance I'm going to be able, what is it?
Tony Disco?
Is that it?
Anthony DeSclafani, yeah, Tony Disco.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, how do you say his last name?
DeSclafani.
DeSclafani, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. I was very hesitant to say his name. But anyway, they are a ground ball machine. Like, they are number one in baseball in putting balls in the ground. All their pitchers have shifted their pitch strategies. They some are throwing cutters more, some are throwing changeups more. They're not throwing hard. So in a league now where it's just velocity, 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 the Giants were like, nope, we're gonna do ground ball, ground ball, ground ball. We're gonna change up what works. Like, they are pulling dudes who are just out of baseball for a couple of years, and like Sammy Long, is that his name? They just it's just amazing that this rotation and this group has come together the way it has. Their defense is right there with the Astros, the best defense in baseball. So if you're going to have all this BABIP action, then you better have a good defense behind these pitchers. And they do. And then, you know, this just all works. And I think it is sustainable that the Giants are just going to be there. And like you said with the Fangraphs, like, they may not win the division, but I think this is a playoff team. And man, if we get Giants Padres at the wild card matchup, whew,
like, oh boy, Gausman Darvish, let's do that.
I mean, I want Dodgers Padres as the wild card matchup. Like, that is what America needs, the Padres versus the Dodgers in a wild card matchup. But yeah, what do you make of that piece, and what do you make of just the Giants still trudging along in a very different, unique way this year?
Well, I mean, this is the plan they had in the first place, right? When Farhan Zaidi took over, is that they were going to get younger and more flexible and deeper. And I think a lot of success of this particular Giants team, some of those older guys like Posey and Crawford, and when he was healthy, Evan Longoria, kind of bouncing back to being more like their past all-star selves. But you've also got contributions, I mean, and Brandon Belt too, I guess you can add to that pile. But that's mostly on the hitter side of things. I think pitcher-wise, well, for starters, hitter-wise, they've got a lot of better depth now than I think that, you know, previous Giants teams ever had. Guys like Austin Slater, Wilmer Flores, Mauricio Dubon, this kid they just sent down, Lamonte Wade Jr. You know, there are useful pieces in their minor league system who have actually been able to contribute when they've been called up and when they've been needed. Similarly, I think they've gotten a lot more of that pitching depth now. They have an actual rotation now with Gausman and DeSclafani. They've been able to and that's kind of what you need when you're going to rely on guys like Alex Wood or a 35-year-old Johnny Cueto or whatever Aaron Sanchez is at this point. You need to have those backup options. And those didn't really exist before. And granted, like, yeah, this is still a team that had to give two starts to current Scott Kazmir. But I think there's just more. I do feel like there's more depth. Obviously, this is a good hitting team that has, you know, that is taking advantage of, again, like I said, older guys being back. But it just does feel like this is a deeper team overall with more options for when things get hairy. I think the major issue they probably have right now is the bullpen probably would like another more consistent arm in there. I think if you're looking at what the Giants are going to be doing at the deadline, if they are a legitimate team, and if they, you know, if they are going to buy, and I think they kind of have to, I think what you're probably looking for is maybe some outfield help, maybe a back of the rotation starter, and probably more likely than not, I think the big emphasis will be bullpen help. I know we didn't really mention with Gibson, but this is a team that would make a lot of sense for Kyle Gibson, just a guy who can just be in the middle of the rotation and just gobble things, who's going to be cheap next year as well. Who probably won't cost that much in prospects, I don't think. Even if he is pitching well, and even if he is cheaply signed for next year, he is still Kyle Gibson. He's still in his 30s. You know, that's not the greatest. But, you know, I think that's someone who, I mean, obviously Kyle Gibson can help a lot of teams, but I think especially a team that already has a number one guy in place and really just needs rotation depth more than anything, I think he makes a lot of sense there.
Yeah, I just think it's a cool story. Like, I like when the one thing that scares me is, like, I think he referred to him as the Tampa Bay Rays of the NL now. And I'm like, well, San Francisco's a gigantic market. Let's not encourage Zaidi in this front office to not spend in the coming years. That just because the rebuild's just it's a different kind of rebuild. But I think this is something that it feels like the Giants are not going anywhere, which is bad news for the Diamondbacks. The Rockies do not matter. But it's also, I guess, bad news for the Padres, too, with just how much they invested in this offseason that the Giants just came out of nowhere. But it's also just cool as a reminder that baseball can be weird, and that just because this is what we think going into the year, this is how all this will go. You know, sometimes it just doesn't go that way. It's cool that the Giants are just an out of nowhere team, because it feels like that's harder and harder to do now in today's baseball.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, that if anyone's most pissed about this, like you said, it's the Padres, because like you said, they put so much effort and money and work into this offseason to cement themselves as a top five NL team and certainly a real NLS contender. Now they have this out of nowhere Giants team they have to deal with that might push them not just into a wild card spot, but also into the visitor's side, the visitor's wild card spot. You know, they didn't even get the home game for that one, which I imagine would be huge for San Diego. So yeah, I imagine AJ Preller is probably not particularly happy with how quickly the Giants have managed to turn that around.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so either. John Taylor, what can we check out from you across the Twitter sphere, Fangraphs.com? What should the listeners do if they are on the fence about being a subscriber to Fangraphs.com?
Well, I'd just say for starters, if you become a Fangraphs subscriber, especially if you subscribe to our yearly ad-free model, you get to browse Fangraphs ad-free, which makes for a much nicer, faster, and more pleasant browsing experience. But overall, if you sign up for a Fangraphs membership, it basically just keeps Fangraphs in business. All our money goes toward paying our writers, paying for server space, adding new stats. You know, we're trying to add new stats and features all the time. We've added a lot of the Statcast stats now to our player pages and to our leaderboards so that, you know, you can just have everything in one nice place. We got a piece out if you're interested as to what the Fangraphs tools can do for you just as a casual reader. There's a good piece from yesterday just from our Ben Clemens, just a quick overview of what tools are useful if you want to do your own trade deadline preview stuff, if you're out there looking to write about the deadline, podcast about the deadline, tweet about the deadline, and you want to sound smart and intelligent, go over to Fangraphs, use our tools. The one thing I do want to plug for today, I don't know what time this is going to go out, but regardless of what time it goes out, check it out. We have a live watch-along for today's YouTube game between Oakland and Texas featuring Eric Longenhagen over on our Twitch page, twitch.tv/FangraphsLive, or on our Fangraphs homepage. We'll have a live stream there too. There are going to be some special guests who have yet to be announced, but there will be folks dropping in, hanging out with Eric as he talks about the game, about the farm systems, about how each organization works. So stop by for that, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, if you're interested. We try to do those semi-regularly, and we always advertise them ahead of time, so be sure to check that out. Otherwise, yeah, just keep on coming to Fangraphs, sign up for a membership if you are not a member, and help us stay in business and keep doing cool baseball stuff.
All right. Well, go do that if you are not already. John, thank you as always for the time. We will talk next week. Go Vols.
Go. Is that the way it is? Go Vols. You don't have like your own like Boomer Sooner or War Eagle or nothing.
I mean, there's Go Big Orange. There's VFL, Vol for Life. But Go Vols is just it.
Go Vols. Fine. Okay. Go Vols.
There you go. I love it. Bye, John.
All right.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.